ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Hi, I'm Patricia Carvelis, host of Politics Now, the ABC's podcast unpacking the latest political news. Every week you'll hear me and the sharpest political minds at the ABC.
Because this has much, much higher stakes for the US and for us, frankly, than the conflict in the Middle East, the conflict between Russia and Ukraine. This is World War III stuff. We're talking about China, the US, the two big superpowers.
So join me for Politics Now on the ABC Listen app.
Last month, when Donald Trump sat down with Anthony Albanese, they signed a landmark critical minerals deal because we have lots of them and the US needs them. But while we cozy up to America, we're also providing critical minerals to China, which it's using to build some of the most sophisticated weaponry in the world. Today, Four Corners reporter Angus Grigg on how the government wants trade with China to continue, despite the security fears. I'm Sam Hawley on Gadigal Land in Sydney. This is ABC News Daily. Angus, rare earths, we've been talking a lot about them in recent weeks, and by now I think we all know that we have a lot of them.
We do indeed. These sort of once very obscure minerals are suddenly sort of front of mind. And yeah, absolutely, Australia has some of the largest reserves of both critical minerals and within that rare earths in the world. We're seeing this huge step up in demand for these critical minerals and rare earths. So in the bigger picture sort of economic story, it's a very good one for Australia.
Yeah, and of course we saw Donald Trump and Anthony Albanese sign that big deal in Washington.
To take our relationship to that next level. So thank you very much, Mr. President.
Well, thank you very much, Anthony. It's an honour to sign this.
Amazing deal, really. And that all came about because China has threatened to cut off the supply of heavy rare earths. And these are the minerals or the magnets, if you like, that are really critical for everything from fighter jets, hypersonic missiles, submarines, laptop computers, renewable energy. So China has dominated the processing of rare earths, and that is a real strategic weakness for the West.
And the problem with that, Angus, is that there is a fear, of course, that the chances of conflict in the region with China is increasing. That's according, of course, to some, although not every analyst.
Yeah, I think you could look at China over the last 20 years. And I spent 6 years there as a correspondent. Mm. And in the early days of China's military buildup, you could see and you could make an argument that they were modernising their military. I think in the last 5 to 6 years, they've gone well beyond that. One of the things I was very surprised about is when we went to Canberra, we talked to the Vice Chief of the Defence Force, Robert Chipman, and he was very open about the anxiety and the worry that we have a more aggressive, more robust China in the region, and that the risk of conflict between sort of 2027 and 2040 was growing and was significant.
We're paid to think about the world's worst days and make sure that we're prepared for those. And so it is natural that I worry about what might be in our future.
And there is a keen sense that we are entering a very dangerous period in the region over the next 10 to 15 years.
Historically, we've enjoyed a 10-year warning time to conflict. We now assess that that warning time has evaporated and that we need to be ready sooner than that.
Yeah, you also spoke to Jennifer Parker. She's a former operations director for coalition forces in the Middle East. She was really noting, of course, after that huge military parade that they had in China, just how sophisticated the Chinese weaponry now is.
Coming up next for inspection is the first nuclear missiles formation.
So what we're looking at here is actually really significant. It is the demonstration of the nuclear triad. So we've thought for a while that China had the ability to launch nuclear weapons from land, subsurface, and from the air. But actually what we saw in front of us is the first demonstration of all of that together, and really the first confirmation from China that they have that ability.
So that parade served two purposes. The first one was to show the rest of the world, but particularly America, look at what China's got, look at our military technology. The second thing about that parade, which was pretty interesting, was that China displayed a number of their hypersonic missiles, which we hadn't seen before. Mm. You know, hypersonic missiles are really changing how modern wars are fought. Not only do they travel very fast, but they're also maneuverable, so they're very hard to shoot down.
So fast, in fact, Angus, that really you can barely see them or hear them.
Exactly. They travel at a minimum of 5 times the speed of sound. So it makes it very hard for air defence systems to actually shoot them down. Mm. And that's why they are so dangerous.
Mm. Well, Angus, to make these really sophisticated hypersonic missiles that China has, there's one crucial commodity that is required, and we actually have an abundance of it.
Yeah, this was a sort of stunning revelation to us, really. There is one or two minerals that you don't need a huge amount of, but are absolutely vital for military technology and a country's military buildup. In China's case, that's called zirconium. It is a once very obscure mineral, mainly used in bath tiles and in toilets. Mm-hmm. So the reason that your toilet is beautiful and white is because of mineral sands or zirconium. Mm. In more recent years, they've discovered that actually zirconium has a very high melting point, so more than 1,800 degrees, and that makes it really ideal for hypersonic missiles, for the cone on hypersonic missiles, but also around the back of them. Because they are travelling so fast and they do get so hot, zirconium is absolutely vital for these hypersonic missiles.
So, Angus, China, as it goes about its military build-up, it needs zirconium and lots of it. And as you say, we have a fair bit of this. And even though as a nation we are concerned about China's military build-up, you found out, Angus, that we've actually allowed China to take control of a Western Australian mining company to actually gain access to zirconium. The company's called Image Resources. So just tell me about that.
Yeah, so this is one of the great sort of paradoxes. Australia has the largest reserves in the world of zirconium, and we are China's biggest supplier of zirconium. We provide 41% of China's imported zirconium. So back in 2015, China clearly understood the high value uses of zirconium, that it wasn't just for bath tiles and dunnies. They realised that it was a really key ingredient for their military build-up. And so they gradually, as they've done in many parts of the world, they gradually started taking control of Australian mineral sands projects. Mm. And one of those was Image Resources, which has a couple of mines north of Perth. And this was a deal that was waved through by Australia's Foreign Investment Review Board. And I think partly because they just didn't understand that zirconium had a dual use, if you like. While it was, yes, very important in bathrooms, it was also very important for military technology. And it's interesting that the company that ultimately owns or is the controlling shareholder, the largest shareholder in Image Resources, is called China's LB Group. Mm-hmm. And we went and looked through their annual report, and you can see that they lay out 11 pages of subsidies from the Chinese government. And this is because this company, LB Group, along with a lot of others, is considered to be a strategic enterprise for China. What it lays out in that 11 pages is just how involved the government is in every aspect of their business, and particularly the aspects which have a military application to them, or a sort of strategic application for China.
Mm, well, you tried to interview the CEO of Image Resources, that's Patrick Mutz. What did he have to say?
Yeah, look, this was a very interesting thing that in the Image Resources annual report, they talk very openly about the defence applications for their mineral sands, and particularly zirconium. They talk about aerospace, they talk about rockets, they talk about hypersonic vehicles, they talk about jet engines. But when we tried to ask the CEO of Image Resources, Patrick Mutz, about this, he was a little more coy, I guess. So we didn't get to sit down with Patrick Mutz. He actually declined an on-camera interview, but he did send us a number of statements. Mm. And he tried to play down the defence applications, said that the company had sort of lower-grade zirconium, that it was mainly used in bathroom tiles. But he did concede that he wasn't entirely sure how his product was used in China. Mm. And I guess one of the key things to say here is that there's nothing wrong with this. There is very limited Australian government regulations around the exports of zirconium. You know, he's doing nothing wrong in selling unprocessed mineral sands to China.
Angus, just so I've got this right, we as a nation and an ally of the United States, we're concerned by China's military buildup, but we're also assisting with the military buildup through the supply of critical minerals. So tell me, what does Richard Marles, the defence minister, have to say about that?
Now, this is something we've done for the last 20 years or so. We have sort of played this double game, if you like. Now, that has worked out okay for us, but it's getting harder and harder. As tensions grow between China and the US, it makes it increasingly difficult for Australia to walk both sides of the street. And I think zirconium is probably a classic example of that. And so Richard Marles, in speaking to us, was really dismissive of the idea that we should have any export controls on our minerals.
Well, there are challenges in this space. I very much accept that. There are other sources of zirconium from around the world, such that Australia withdrawing from the zirconium market would not mean that the military use of zirconium would also stop.
Doesn't it show, though, that Australia's sort of economic policy and its security policy in this instance are working at cross purposes?
No, but it does show that there's a complexity here for sure.
Australia is the largest exporter in the world.
Yes, we do engage with China in terms of trade and commerce. There are thousands upon thousands of jobs in our economy which are based upon that, and that has really been very important in terms of Australia's economic growth for decades. So, you know, that you can't divorce yourself from that reality.
And that was quite surprising, actually, because I don't think the regulations in Australia and the oversight in Australia has caught up with some of the dual-use applications for our minerals. And he said that, yes, while Australia was the biggest producer of zirconium in the world, our limiting or more scrutiny of trade with China wasn't going to limit the military applications for zirconium.
And Angus, given that China is actually expanding its nuclear program, even if it doesn't want to admit it, surely we can't just ignore this and just continue the way we're going.
Well, this is one of the really disturbing things about this story, is that zirconium's not just used for conventional weapons. It's a really key part of the nuclear fuel cycle. It's used to clad nuclear fuel rods in nuclear reactors. It's for nuclear submarines, nuclear aircraft carriers. And also, most experts believe that you cannot divorce the civilian nuclear program from any weapons program. In fact, they are one and the same. And that's particularly the case in China, where the China National Nuclear Corporation oversees both the civilian nuclear energy program and the weapons program. So Australia sending or selling zirconium to China, which is then used to clad nuclear fuel rods, it is aiding the weapons program, no doubt at all.
So what do you think happens then if we continue just to sell these critical minerals to China that in essence, you know, is supporting its military expansion?
Yeah, so China has gone from about 300 nuclear warheads to about 600 warheads. So it's doubled its nuclear arsenal in about the last 5 years. And all predictions are that by 2030, it'll have about 1,000 nuclear warheads. And this has really changed the balance or the strategic balance, not only in the region, but in the world. It was much easier when we just had two nuclear-armed superpowers, mm-hmm. Russia and the United States. Now we've got this three-headed monster, if you like, and deterrence and arms control and the calculations and the game theory that go into that are so much more complex when you have three players, not two. And the real problem is that China doesn't like to talk about its nuclear weapons and doesn't like to engage in dialogue around arms control. And so it's made the risk of a nuclear miscalculation, if you like, so much greater.
Angus Grieg is a reporter with Four Corners. You can watch his report tonight on ABC TV at 8:30 or on iView. This episode was produced by Sydney Peed. Audio production by Cinnamon Nippard. Our supervising producer is David Cody. I'm Sam Hawley. Thanks for listening.